Love this podcast? Support this show through the Acast Supporter feature. It's up to you how much you give and there's no regular commitment. Just hit the link in the show description to support now.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds. Recently, I asked Mint Mobile's legal team if big wireless companies are allowed to raise prices due to inflation. They said yes. And then when I asked if raising prices technically violates those onerous two-year contracts, they said, what the f*** are you talking about, you insane Hollywood ass f***? So to recap, we're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
If you're struggling to lose weight, you've probably heard about weight loss medications like Wegovy or Zepbound, and you might be wondering if they're right for you. Meet PlushCare, a leading telehealth provider with doctors who are there for you day and night to partner with you in your weight loss journey. If you qualify, they can safely prescribe you medication from the comfort of your own home. To get started, visit plushcare.com/weightloss. That's plushcare.com/weightloss. plushcare.com/weightloss.
Hello and welcome back to the Thistle Scottish Rugby Podcast. Just when you thought we weren't going to do any podcasts, we thought we would wait a whole month until the end of the Six Nations sort of calm down. Then we would come back and hit you with our analysis of the Six Nations. And luckily enough, our dear leader, Mark Dodson, nipped in ahead of it and gave us something new to talk about. So it is David, Matt and Alan back to recap on everything that's been going on in Scottish rugby in the last few weeks. Matt, how you doing, pal?
Very well, thanks. Nice to be back. It's felt like a long time. It's good to be just constantly on the pulse, reviewing the Six Nations after two or three weeks. But
has it been 3 weeks? Yeah.
Has it been 3 weeks? I think it might be that.
Yeah, I think it is.
All good.
You were at a Wednesday wedding today, though. But even at a Wednesday wedding, you're still getting accosted by pod fans.
This is the thing. Just, you know, Wednesday wedding, speaking to one family from Scotland, one from Northern Ireland. And it was the Northern Irish. Mr. Gordon, I'll give him a wee shout out, was saying he was a fan. So I said I'd mention him at some point. So there you go. Good man. Good to meet him.
There you go, Mr. Gordon. Alan, how are you?
Good. You know, like the fans don't really want previews and reviews of Scotland v Ireland. It's the post Mark Dodson interview review that the real Thistle Ultras want.
That's what they're coming back for, yeah. They want to hear our views on Mark Dodson's podcast debut.
And goatee.
Yeah. It was good. I don't know where they were recording it. It sounded like he was miles away from the microphone in like a canteen or something like that. The sound quality was poor, which is rich coming from us, but still.
What restaurant in Edinburgh do you think Dodson? Do you think contractually it has to be whatever the steak place is?
Kylo.
I reckon Dodson pulls rank though, and he's like, I'm not going to that steak restaurant. Like, I'm going to Tom Kitchen or something.
Private room in Tiger Lily.
I could actually see him doing that. Like that Dakota Hotel. I could see him going there.
I think he'd want to go to the kitchen, but because it was the BBC, they were like, we won't be able to get the expenses through. So you've got to go somewhere a bit mid market.
Weirdly booked out Shanghai.
Yeah. A podcast recorded in a booth in Shanghai on George Street. Yeah. Well, it certainly covered an awful lot of ground. And if you've been following us on Twitter, that's at Thistle Rugby Pod. We've been putting in some initial thoughts in there, but we thought we would jump on this classic medium, the one where we made our name, and do a little bit of a podcast, looking back at the comments from Mark Dodson, which give us an opportunity also to talk back and look at the sort of the state of the nation following the Six Nations. Matt, I'll come to you first. I suppose the main news line that led the sort of reporting following the interview was obviously talking about Townsend's future, Dodson talking about the fact that they've had a sort of open process you know, talking to global names in the game about Scotland, what they think about Scotland, and what those people would theoretically do if they were theoretically asked to be the Scotland coach. But I guess it, what it means is it sort of puts Townsend on notice, and I think he was, it was quite clear that maybe he's not 100% enamored with Townsend. That was my reading, and that he's sort of, they're assessing whether Tooney is the man to take them forward beyond the World Cup. What did you make of it all? I suppose just that airing the sort of process in public felt a little bit strange, firstly.
Yeah, it is a bit of an odd one, given that I think a lot of those questions in the media these days would just be met with a straight bat. And I think there's also the context that it seems as if Dodson and Townsend have had a pretty strong relationship over the last however many years it has been that he's been in charge, to the point that people, at least on Twitter and wider circles of Scottish rugby, have questioned whether it's actually too close and too cozy a relationship. So yeah, it was pretty surprising. I mean, I think, you know, ask the question on Twitter whether we potentially do need a change, and it's Dodson's job to ask those questions and look around and try and get the best possible coach. So in a sense, I think it's kind of admirable, or sensible at least. But then at the same time, I think, you know, Townsend has a very good record relative to other coaches in the pro era. And, you know, it's difficult to think of someone else who would maybe get more out of the current squad. So yeah, it's a bit of an odd one, I suppose. Not something I expected him to say.
Yeah, I mean, Alan, looking at the facts of particularly this Six Nations, third in the Six Nations, we lost only to Ireland and France, numbers 1 and 2 in the world. We are in fifth place in the world. Townsend is statistically the most successful Scotland coach ever. Do you think it's, I don't know if disrespectful is the right word, but, you know, do you think it's prudent that Dodson's going through this, or do you think that Townsend should be feeling, you know, a little bit aggrieved that he's being put through the mill like this?
I think it's pretty prudent. And ultimately, coming into the Six Nations, I think if you polled a lot of fans, people were mainly siding on the fact that Townsend has potentially run its course. And I actually think, you know, ultimately performance in Six Nations have probably swung that back across the other way. But ultimately, if it had been a poor Six Nations and Dodson hadn't started sounding out people, I'm sure there would have been criticism on the other side that, you know, Dodson wasn't planning effectively. So I think it's completely fair. I think it's fair on both sides for people to have sort of conversations, kind of understand what the market is. But I do have sympathy. You got to remember, Townsend is the longest serving coach of any sort of like tier one international team. You know, he's been there, 7 years now. And I do think there is a question of whether, especially in the professional era, whether, you know, ultimately coaches, their effectiveness does start to sort of run out over sort of a long, once you get to a certain point. And I think Townsend, to be fair to him, sort of post 2019 World Cup, was able to kind of change the way they played and sort of slightly kind of altered how they sort of approached matches, kind of obviously slightly heavier emphasis on defence. But I do wonder whether another cycle with the same coach and a broadly similar coaching staff is going to have the impact we need it to.
But I mean, looking at, I suppose all we can talk about is the names that we sort of know are in the frame. So, you know, your Leon McDonald's, for example. Is it the case, Matt, that actually there isn't anyone on paper better and available than Townsend in the market at the moment?
That's the thing. I think there was this like pipe dream that Scott Robertson would come, but obviously it was probably unlikely in the first place, and definitely
Scott
not
Robertson obviously
now.
Doesn't spend a lot of time on Scottish rugby Twitter. Doesn't really understand that there was a lot of people keen for him.
Although I saw he was talking on the Jim Hamilton podcast about his playing time at Ayr back in the day, and he seemed to genuinely hold very fond memories. So I don't know if they could have leveraged that a bit more, but I think
lovely
beyond him, there's like speculation around like maybe a Jamie Joseph, but I don't think he's shown any desire to leave Japan. And then, yeah, Leon McDonald's a name that's been bandied around. And I wonder if it's just, you know, he's a Kiwi, he's coaching a Super Rugby team.
Yeah.
So he will like immediately become an option. But it doesn't seem as if there's much sort of truth to that. I could be completely wrong. But I think also at the end of the day, I think he's done a pretty good job with the Blues. But also I think the Blues have got a really good playing squad. And
yeah,
ultimately he would be cutting his teeth at international level whilst in the post, learning as he, you know, on the job, which I appreciate Townsend did, but I think it's different when you've got a homegrown coach like he was at the time. So I think that even if someone like Liam McDonald, who's maybe the most obvious candidate out there, still comes with quite a lot of risks. It's not sort of that simple a fit, I don't think. So, and beyond that, you know, I'm sure there are other names, but there's not been too many mentioned ultimately.
Steve Diamond, PRing his way into the job.
So what you're telling me, we want a coach who's obviously performing at a high level, who's got international experience. Is it not just Franco Smith?
Yes.
Franco Smith. Franco Smith is Italy coach, wasn't he?
He was.
Yeah.
I've forgotten about that. Yeah, but Italy, yeah, they're terrible, and they are terrible. Not his fault.
Franco can't do any wrong, though.
If Franco goes on and wins the URC, do you just give him the gig?
Do you think we've not moved past those days, though, when basically like any Edinburgh Glasgow coach would sort of not be guaranteed, but be very likely to get the national gig?
No.
Like when Andy Robertson, for instance.
If Edinburgh were like fifth in the table right now, Mike Blair would probably be favourite for the Scotland job.
True. That's a good point.
What about Big Dave Rennie?
I miss Dave. I'd like him, but I get the impression from a family standpoint, it'd be difficult for him to move back.
I think his reputation has taken a bit of a blow coaching Australia as well. Once again, I don't think it's his fault, but ultimately his win record there
was
pretty terrible.
There's and we obviously Steve Tandy was there was a bit of chat sort of a year or two ago.
Yeah.
That Tandy, especially when his defence very much was kind of the bedrock of Scottish rugby success, that he potentially might step up to the plate and take over as head coach. Which potentially now with Brad Moore in as attack coach and what looks like an attack that's sort of firing a little bit more than it was a couple of years ago, could be an option, but it doesn't fill you with enthusiasm, Steve Tandy coming in as head coach.
No.
So are we concluding that there isn't anyone better?
I guess it's where could you go? Lancaster?
Well, isn't Lancaster going to Racing?
He's going to Racing, yeah, sure. He's out of the picture.
The
musical chairs just haven't sort of suited
Ronan O'Gara,
Scotland.
Fucking hates us, but he's a class coach.
He's extended at La Rochelle.
I also think he'd like literally laugh at a Scotland gig, I think, at the moment.
Yeah.
I think he would. He'd be like, look, La Rochelle is such a great place to be, and in a couple of years, I'll have my pick of any international team, really.
Probably the Ireland job at some stage.
Well, exactly.
Yeah. There's also Dan McFarland, who...
Yeah,
the shine's come out of Ulster a little bit.
Yeah, that's the thing. About a year ago, I reckon, he was sort of the main man, but I don't think people at Ulster are that happy with him, or as happy at least.
The one that we sort of dismissed a little bit at the start, but the one that I generally think, if he was interested and was available, we should be pushing for is Jamie Joseph. Because I think what he's managed to do with a Highlanders team in terms of winning the Super Rugby with probably the smallest budget, and then with Japan at the Japan World Cup, in terms of being both Scotland and Ireland in the most like high intense, high pressure environment, I think just shows a coach that is able to get a lot out of a set of players that are potentially, you know, it's definitely individually of a lower quality versus their opposition, and able to do it at the right time, and, you know, with the Highlanders relatively consistently, feels like he potentially has the skill set to come in and kind of get more out of the of those Scotland players. But whether he's interested, obviously, is a different question. But if it was me, he would be the number one pick.
That's interesting. I think his style would also suit Scotland in the with the Highlanders and Japan, particularly Japan with the personnel, which is not the same as Scotland, but there are some similarities in terms of having a slightly smaller player pool, physically at least. But it would be a similar style. And I was just Googling to see when his contract runs out. And according to Google, at least, it's the end of 2023. So I wonder if he might feel he's done really well with Japan, but what else could he do with them?
Yeah.
So, you know, theoretically, it could be quite an interesting option. Oh, the Japanese scout. There you go.
Maybe he is the Japanese scout.
Imagine that, Kamish.
Bloody hell. The Japanese scout brings in him as well.
Do you think there was a bonus for the Japanese scout now that Sione got in the team of the series for the Six Nations? That's got to be like the final bonus payout.
Yeah, there was a clause. It was like, if he scores 5 tries to Scotland, you get X amount. If he's named in the Six Nations,
player, I wonder if he's written
team
in
of the team of the champ.
I wonder if he's written in like a clause relating to Sione's brother as well. This is a bit of a kickback. I was going to ask, what is the appointment that would make Scottish rugby Twitter the most angry?
Someone from England?
Gatland? Eddie Jones. Eddie Jones would have been hilarious.
I mean, obviously
Matt Williams.
Matt Williams
coming back could be fucking
Danny hilarious. Danny Wilson's a good one.
Alan Solomons would be an interesting
one. Alan Solomons, yeah, would also be great.
An interesting one, just thinking about ex-Edinburgh player, I don't think it'd be a good option, was obviously the Todd Blackadder. But he's just, obviously, with Bath, and he's just been sort of sauntering off in Japan. Obviously, he does have that strong connection to Scotland, but he's just not had enough success to really warrant that big a gig. But yeah, Cockerell returning.
That would really polarise. I actually think it would be more negative than positive reaction to Cockerell.
Yeah.
I think Cockerell's a bit of a busted flush these days.
It's an interesting one. It's like if Pete O'Mahony just like decided to take up coaching and came straight in. That'd be like the thing that'd be like the biggest bait for a score. I think it's unlikely, but I think that would piss everybody off. It's going to be really interesting to see. I suppose it's Dodson and Tooney are meeting in the David Lloyd sauna this week to talk. If you're sitting in his sauna seat, Alan, are you're Tooney in, giving him another roll of the dice?
Looking at the market, if I couldn't get Jamie Joseph, I don't think there's any other coach available who is going to be able to do more with that set of players. I look at Liam McDonald and we're saying, you know, he's done okay with the Blues, but he's got an unbelievable set of players and he's not managed. They've been top of the ladder, but they've not actually managed to win any of the Super Rugby comps. As you said, Dave Rennie's kind of his star's fallen a little bit. There doesn't really feel like there's anyone within the kind of British Isles that stands out. As you said, McFarlane's kind of dropped off. It feels like Tooney is probably in the hot seat and the favourite. I guess the interesting one is, and I know Hogg come out and said that he would give Tooney an extension, although I'm not quite sure how Hogg is really meant to answer that any other way. It sort of creates a big media storm if he answers it any other way or even refuses to answer it.
Yeah,
I know Dodson sort of said the players are keen for Townsend today. I guess it's just how accurate a statement that is, right? So it'd be
quite an odd thing to say if he was considering not. It's an odd thing to say in general, actually, that.
Yeah. I can't remember if he was sort of specific. I think he was specifically asked about the players. And so, again, a very difficult question to answer.
Yeah.
Unless
yeah.
your answer is the players want him to stay, right? But again, it does feel, especially with, I would say, the sort of younger to mid group, that Townsend is extremely well liked. So it's obviously it always feels like it's slightly more than maybe those older players who he's always had a little bit more difficulty with, that sort of coach player relationship.
But is the only person he's really had difficulty with Russell, and maybe Hogg?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Trying to sort of think through. It feels like you could probably put, like, I was going to say Price as well, but yeah. And I think Barkley has sort of made comments and said that they weren't quite aligned in terms of what they thought the right approach was. I think Barkley is obviously a bit more of a politician, you know.
but then wasn't the chat that Barkley, that Cockerill didn't want to keep Barkley at Edinburgh, and Townsend lobbied hard to keep him there because he was very keen to have him in his World Cup squad. I mean, maybe Barkley still didn't like him, but that would feel like feel quite harsh.
Yeah. I don't think it's a question of Barkley disliking him at all. I think it was probably they were just a little bit misaligned on approach when it came to the World Cup. But I agree. I think you're right. Ultimately, you're 80% of it's Russell, and then probably 19% of it's Hogg, and there's probably like a tiny little bit less.
Has he had problems with Hogg since the like Ulster days in like when he was still at Glasgow, or does that all date back to then? I suppose Hogg was part of like the drinking stuff at the last Six Nations, but
that's what I'd point to, just the drinking stuff.
And I say I felt Hogg's demeanour post, felt a little bit like there was some level of
the tail end of Hogg's time as Scotland captain. Hogg was not in a particularly great place. He wasn't coming across particularly well.
No, I'm agreed. So what are we?
Are we tuning in?
Yeah.
I think looking at the market, I just don't think there's a better option.
No,
I don't get that excited about tuning in either.
I think Townsend's done quite a good job at times of refreshing his coaching staff. So I think of like bringing Steve Tandy in. At the time, I don't think people were that impressed by it, but it made a massive difference, right? Went on to coach Lions. And it seems as if that Zonda guy didn't really work, but John DL's pretty well regarded. And then bringing in, I'd say, Moore and Pete Horn ahead of the last Six Nations. It's hard to tell exactly what impact that had, but it seems to be largely positive. So I wonder if you can get a little bit more. We brought in Peter de Villiers, who I think seems to have done a pretty good job.
Yeah.
I wonder if he refreshes the coaches in some sense. That's the only real way, alongside the playing the playing squad he's got. I suppose that's like the only way that you kind of freshen things up if you do keep him.
No, that's fair. Just a quick one. I did not envisage Pete Horn becoming like this like niche like breakdown coach that he seems to have like carved out a role in with Scotland.
Is he a breakdown coach? I thought he was like a skills coach.
Maybe we just scratch this. Let's edit out. Maybe I've got this completely wrong.
No.
I think that's fine. No, you're not. Fine. I have editing powers, and I'm not editing that out. So.
Yeah, we've lost our train of thought with that intervention, Alan.
Sorry, but I do agree that I actually think you're right in the sense that over Townsend's 7 years, there has been this sort of constant refresh of coaches sitting underneath Townsend. And whilst obviously one or two haven't quite landed, it does feel like a lot of them have brought something to the table and something to sort of complement Townsend. So I think it's a good, maybe it's one of these things you say where Townsend sort of shifts in, but potentially you look to sort of freshen up that backroom staff a little bit.
You're right, by the way. Quoting Townsend at the time of Horns, Pete has done a great job in the contact area with Glasgow. It was one area where we felt the backs had to improve in the autumn. That would be Pete's specific focus, as well as working with the players on skills and adding to our group.
So the contact area for the backs specifically?
Maybe. It's reasonably vague.
If you imagine you're like Jamie Ritchie and like Pete Horn's telling you how to like win the breakdown, I'd be like, fuck off, Pete.
Yeah, it's not like Pete. It's like Dunbar, right? Dunbar could get over the ball.
You get over the ball, yeah.
I can't imagine Pete Horn was getting a lot of like turnovers in his time. But yeah, there you go.
I think there's also the case. It's a massive decision. I thought it was interesting that Dodson was like, this is a big decision that I have to make. Because I think there's been a couple of bits of commentary that's sort of like, why is the chief executive of the union involved in this? But I think, you know, that is why Mark Dodson makes his bonuses, right? That's why he gets paid to make these sort of big decisions. Is there a risk that we...
Let's not go down that route.
Yeah.
His bonuses. But no, I agree. I think it's still like a small enough organization that, and it is a big decision within that context, but that he has to be involved with those sort of appointments.
Yeah.
Quite closely.
Well, he's got it. It's like probably like the second most important person in the organization. If you put Dodson at number one, which I know a lot of people wouldn't, but he is the chief executive, whether they like it or not.
Yeah.
No, agree. I guess ultimately you don't know how that process works as well, right? It's almost certainly probably managed by like Malander.
Dodson sitting on a panel with Mossy, Big Al Kellogg. Adam Ash is doing the Glasgow Business Club now, isn't he?
He's over in Chicago.
Is he?
Yeah.
He was for a bit,
to be fair. He's put in his feedback. Don't worry about it.
Yeah, he's done his time.
Alan Jacobson's just like a consultant.
Yeah.
The process.
Like a real rogue.
Alan Jacobson's just like, Alan Jacobson's like, does he like pines?
Yeah. He makes Leon McDonald go on a day on the tools just to like see if he's a good lad.
But no, you can imagine that Malander is leading that process with ultimately a recommendation or something. Is what I would expect.
Malander's been very sort of like under the radar. Like, he hasn't been like a real public figure within the SRU at all, which I thought he might have been.
100%.
Still don't really know what he does. What does he do? Like, director of rugby, like the rugby
like
program?
High performance or something like that? I don't know.
High performance.
I guess he's just sort of got a remit for almost all rugby, right? All like sort of high performance rugby from age group through to Super Six through to professional through to international, and sort of trying to manage that pipeline.
Yeah.
Which hasn't been going that well, to be fair.
Not been going that well. Although interesting comment on the Dodson pod that they've recognized that there's a problem. Pretty good of them to get their head around that.
Yeah, it was like after when Scotland under-20s lost Ireland, they were like, all right, shit. We think there might be a problem now.
This might be the problem, the fact that we've won like one under-20s game in like a decade.
Yeah, they went to Kane Murray. They're like, how did you allow this to happen? What's going on? How did this happen?
I did think again, like Dodson also cited that Kenny Murray had this stat of like the number of pro appearances that Scotland players had versus like the France team had. And he was like, I couldn't believe it. And I was like, everyone knows that, Mark. Like, we've been talking about this for so fucking long.
Yeah.
Like, I think he was aiming to be like down to the... He's like, I'm really in the detail here. But actually, by saying that, it came across to me that he was fucking miles away. Well, like, why has no one told Mark Dodson that before?
I did like... one of my favorite bits was his tone has very much changed in 2015 when they said they were going to win the Rugby World Cup. Was that 2019?
Yeah. No, it was 15 he said we were going to win. I think he said he wanted to semi-finals in 19.
And then he's
and now
said,
he's basically
like,
saying like we might not even get out of the group.
Yeah, he was like, if we get out of the group, wow. It's like, I mean, it's actually the thing is that's a reasonable point to make, but.
Yeah. He had to toe. I think he had to toe the line on that because he'll be on like a board within World Rugby, right? So he couldn't completely and utterly open up World Rugby on the draw.
Yeah, yeah.
He sort of said it was good from a commercial standpoint.
And then he was quickly like, "This would be the best World Cup ever." Like, all right.
Yeah. Any other bits from the interview that stood out for you, Alan?
Yeah, interesting comment. About Italy and how they've sort of been doing almost what a bit of like shared knowledge, sort of knowledge share. And interesting the comment about how Italy seemed to have really nailed, or not nailed, but significantly improved this like school to age group sort of transition, but haven't managed to kind of do this sort of age group to professional rugby transition, which if they managed to nail that, we're totally fucked.
But again, it came across to me. He was like, Franco Smith's got some good ideas. And I was like, but Franco Smith's only been in the SRU for like 2 months. Like, what were you thinking before?
I know. And then his sort of view that we were good at transitioning people from age group to pro, which I'm not sure if that is correct.
That is incorrect.
I think it's wrong, yeah.
Wrong. But objectively wrong. Yeah,
but we were struggling at this sort of school to age grade rugby. So I don't know. Obviously he was saying that there is like, so I think it was sort of a vague reference to a new sort of like age grade strategy being put in place, and they know what Ireland are doing, et cetera, et cetera. And that's fine, but obviously there's not a lot of clarity on what that strategy is or what they're doing differently. And obviously, look, as we said, he's been in charge for 12 years, and this isn't an issue that's new, right? And I think a lot of people could have flagged that there was a lot of issues, or a lot of people did flag there's been a lot of issues over the last sort of 5 or 6 years. So, but I get it's difficult, right? He's obviously got quite a broad brief, and clearly his focus in his role, especially over the last, maybe say, sort of pre-COVID, it was definitely commercial and the international team. And then you sort of had COVID and it was basically like survival, right? And I think you've sort of come out the back of COVID. They've sort of been a bit too much of a focus on commercial and the international team. COVID's like decimated their finances. And you probably just sort of come out the back and actually so you sort of look back and age grade rugby and probably the pro teams that maybe a little bit, I'm not sure, have just been a bit neglected and haven't quite had the resources and the focus that they needed. So look, obviously better late than never, right? But it does feel like someone really needs to sort of grab that sort of school to pro rugby journey and pipeline and really.
If only somebody had done a 3,000-word Substack on the state of Scottish private school rugby, on they could advise.
I mean, to be fair, mine's offered no solutions, so
there's a lot of questions, very good questions, but yeah, it's top there.
Turn Strathallan into just like a feeder system. I mean, it essentially already is a feeder system, but what they're doing out there, I don't know. They seem to keep getting it right.
It's just
a study of what Strath are doing.
And it was Dodds May one quarter was like, oh, well, I can't create more schools. And I'm like, look, there's not like that many more private schools or like rugby playing schools in Ireland. You know, I don't think it really is this significant volume difference. Right.
Yeah. But he did jump on the schools, but like the clubs are things that he does have control over.
Yeah.
Influence over. Exactly. There's loads of clubs, Mark.
Again, I think there is more that the SU could be doing. And I appreciate the difficulties, both in terms of they don't have control over the schools and there is, you know, a lot of clubs that need support. But it did feel a little bit, not like passing the buck, but, and, you know, it just didn't quite feel like it was being addressed correctly. But hey.
Yeah.
It'll be fine. We've had a few good years. Maybe it's time for us to kind of step back. Get the wooden spoon. Remember, you got to feel that pain again to remember how good beating England at Twickenham is.
Yeah, it's become
we love it.
Less of a achievement these days.
Mm. But Dodson did say that he's committed to standing down in 2025. So we've only got two more years.
14-year reign.
What's the over-under on his next two-year bonuses? 1.2?
What was he topping out at before?
The big one was 900k, I think. But I was like, I don't know if that was his total package or if that was just his bonus.
That must be total.
Yeah. A lot of Kylos.
It couldn't just be like sat.
Then he got 450 in COVID year.
Final year, he just gets given like 30% of the Murrayfield freehold as a parting gift.
As Johnny Petrie returns as SIU chief executive.
Yeah. Yeah. That's.
Bring the job back in house.
Unless Big Al, Glasgow doing some good things. Does Big Al get shipped into the top job?
Maybe. I'm still convinced Big Al's just like a ceremonial figure. And they're like, it's just like, oh, here's the,
I think
here's
Big
the,
Al
here's
listens.
The chief.
That's
he's
sad
just,
for
he's
Big
just
Al.
Like a, he's like a chief, you know, he's like an actual, you know, he's not a chief executive. It's like, here's the big man. Like,
Don McKay probably keeping himself. He's
Don McKay seems pretty good.
Don McKay would be all right. Went to Celtic for like 2 weeks.
Yeah, doesn't have to deal with everything that comes with that. With
Scottish rugby.
Yeah, I know. I was about to say something else. I said everything that comes with
Bloody
that.
Bloody hell. We were about to get cancelled pretty hard there.
No, yeah,
I'd say Don McKay is probably good money.
Sort of kept himself busy with like a little chairman's role at like European rugby, but it's not a full-time gig. Like he can quite easily shift across. Just a couple of years working like, I don't know, 20 hours a month. Just keeping himself topped up, getting ready for the top job.
Yeah.
Like Mark Dodson
replaces Gilpin at World Rugby.
Yeah, we're mates with Don McKay, aren't we? So, don't know.
Maybe he did come on the pod once.
Yeah,
it's,
we're mates.
It's a stretch.
Oh, you know,
I think we're mates connected with
every single
with them
person.
On LinkedIn.
Yeah, we're mates with every single person who's been on this podcast. Is that not how it works?
I'm pretty sure a lot of people hate us.
Richard Cockrell hated us.
Yeah, 100%.
He was literally like sat in his car, just like, why am I talking to these absolute losers? I wonder if we get Steve Diamond on the pod. Talking of...
I'm a bit too scared, I think.
I'd love Steve Diamond to get the Scotland job purely for him to just like go into the club shop and buy like a sort of 12 to 15 year old like young boys t-shirt and be like, that's what I'm wearing in the box. Ridiculous.
But Steve Diamond was the one who like called Squid Rugby, didn't he? And was stop slagging off my team or I'm coming like knocking out.
Imagine Steve Diamond called you. It would be fucking terrifying.
Oh, horrific. I guess we were, you know, obviously Steve Diamond's been sort of not quite clear what his role is as the sort of like rugby consultant. He's sort of come in for like a week and then just done an interview with the offside line being like, yeah, they're quite weak. they don't want to play for each other, which seems quite a punchy approach.
Yeah, 100%.
But then, like, the top line from one of them was like, what impact have I had? It's like the guys are now fighting each other at training. And I was like, is that what we're going for?
Yeah. It was kind of like a mix of, I think he was trying to be like supportive and positive. He's like, oh, you know, there's some like good talented players here, but also they're shit. I was like, oh, what? I don't really know what the aim of this is.
Yeah. My nice guy asshole theory of like, you have to go one to the other for an Edinburgh coach. Diamond, Blair, Cockrell. Who was before Cockrell?
Was it Solomon's before Cockrell?
Oh, yeah. It breaks down quite quickly, actually.
No, but Solomon's was a nice guy.
Nice guy?
I think.
Yeah, I...
Weak,
I
like, a bit weak.
I
Who
think
was
so.
Before him? Bradley?
He was also weak.
Robinson, bit of a bastard, I think.
Andy Robinson, bit of a bastard, yeah.
Haddon, definitely nice guy.
Oh, yeah, so nice.
Frank Haddon, nice guy. Yeah, they're like, oh, he's too nice. We need a bit of edge. that much. Let's get a nice guy in.
So I think you're right. I think Haddon was nice. Robson had Edge. Then they had Bradley, who was too nice. And then they thought they were bringing in Solomons as an asshole. Because he does look like an asshole. Yes. But he was actually too nice. So then they had to get like the super asshole to like compensate for missing one. Then they've gone Blair and now Diamond.
So then it'll be like Roddy Grant next.
After Diamond, Roddy Grant.
After Diamond, Roddy Grant, and then
Eddie Jones.
Eddie Jones.
The final boss. I find some of the rhetoric around Steve Diamond very strange because, you know, clearly, I think increasingly it is quite clear that these types of coaches will always have a bit of an impact, whether it's for like a couple of months, a year, etc. But it will run its course pretty quickly.
Yeah.
And I think, you know, Diamond is clearly a similar character to Cockrell in terms of, you know, he's like hard, straight talking, etc., etc. But actually, he's like a bit of a lesser in terms of record. He's a bit of a crapper version of Cockrell. You know, ultimately, for everything Cockrell's done with Edinburgh, his actual record with Leicester, I appreciate he's got a good squad, but his record's pretty good. And he, you know, he went off and did some stuff at Toulon as well. Whereas I always find it a bit strange. You look at like Steve Diamond, he sort of kind of was with Saracens for a bit, but didn't do anything. Then he was kind of Sale. Then he sort of like seemed to hang out in Russia for a couple of years. And then he came back to Sale and didn't really win anything for like 7 years. But he still seems to have this like pretty kind of, you know, people seem to respect him and talk about him in those types of conversations for any jobs that come up in the Prem. So I never quite get it with him.
I think in his defense, I think when he was coaching at Sale, I don't know, this might be his PR again, or like just what he was saying at the time, but I think they were operating at a low budget compared to the rest of the Premiership. So they were always like kind of behind the eight ball. And I think that's what people said, like, he's a really great coach, but he's behind the eight ball a bit. But at the same time, I'm kind of with you. And I also think that I would have thought that Cockrell, for all his flaws, set his legacy would be setting those like foundations of like higher standards and higher work rate, etc. And that now you've got to like add to it in some way. And clearly it's not quite worked under Blair, but also I feel, I don't know, do you need to have like a Cockrell type to get that work rate back? I mean, if you do, then like that speaks to some pretty like bad issues, but I don't quite see it.
Just looking at photos of Steve Diamond from his Russia phase. It's like good photos of him standing outside the Kremlin.
Really?
Yeah, there's one of him wearing like one of those like woolly hats as well. Great, just great stuff.
I wonder whether for Edinburgh, you know, someone like Steve Tandy would be an interesting choice. You know, ultimately, Edinburgh being, you know, pretty porous in defence, being a bit weak in the contact. If we do think Steve Tandy. You know, Steve Tandy clearly is pretty well respected across the SRU. If there's thoughts that he could be a future Scotland coach, it feels like he could be a pretty useful fit for Edinburgh.
Is that a step down for Tandy?
I think Edinburgh
like a coach sideways move.
I think Edinburgh coach is bigger than defence coach for Scotland. Like stepping up and then being the top dog. And also just for the SOU, ultimately, it's probably a bit cheaper. You know, obviously finances are a bit tight and being able to sort of transfer someone across potentially feels like a good option.
Well, they did say, again, Dodson did say on the podcast, he sort of said that, like, Steve is contracted until the end of the season. And then there's, like, another cutoff point, which is, like, the start of the next season. And then I think there's like a third cutoff or something like that in like November. So you're just winding down the clock until seeing if Tooney's going to stay for the Scotland job to open it up for Steve.
Just a straight switch. Tooney comes to Edinburgh. diamond to Scotland. No, I mean, to be fair, I think it does make a little bit of sense with Steve, because ultimately any coach, the coaches for Edinburgh could be, obviously, if they are linked up with the national team, then you're not going to get access to them till November. So good to have that option there. I'm not quite sure when. Do you think Blair is just off at the end of the season? Like, he wouldn't stay on. It kind of sounded like Blair wouldn't be around for pre-season next year anyway.
Yeah.
Yeah. Diamond
needs
doesn't
change the scene.
Yeah, Diamond doesn't strike me as the kind of guy who would keep someone on from a previous regime.
Yeah. I don't know anything about Steve Diamond, but it gives strike me that you'd look at Mike Blair stepping down and basically admitting that he can't be a head coach and be like, this guy's weak. I'm not interested in having that.
Yeah, absolutely. I also think Steve Diamond would be like, I don't need a fucking attack coach, and would just like do it all himself and get like three defense coaches in.
I'm ready for it.
I do.
Waters Dam Health.
It'd be really bleak.
I mean, it's not bleak in Glasgow. This is a real just like AOB conversation we're having about Scottish rugby. But I mean, like, Edinburgh doing badly. Let's just comment on news actually from today. Scott Steele joining Edinburgh next season. Alan, got any strong emotions about that?
I wouldn't say I have anything particularly strong.
Good or bad?
Obviously, a pretty solid scrum half, but I'm not sure. I guess it feels like he would be behind Vellacott in the pecking order when he comes in. So again, I guess it makes me think that they probably don't see Charlie Sheil stepping up much further from where he is, if that. You got to think, I haven't actually seen the sort of contracts. I imagine Pergos must be off at the end of the season.
Yeah.
But that would mean you only have two scrum halves then, right?
Well, you'd have Vellacott, Steele and Sheil.
True, yeah. Oh, I don't know. It feels like, I think it's a decent signing as, and it's only a one-year deal. So that speaks to me as like, he's going to be second, third choice.
The only one is now George Horn's resigned with Adobe comes across to Edinburgh.
Yeah.
That's what I was thinking, yeah.
Which I would like.
To Jamie Doby?
I would like it because I feel like, I don't know, it would be good for Scottish rugby as a whole, and Edinburgh, particularly this season, the halfbacks have really struggled. I still like Vellacott a lot, but for whatever reason, you know, I would have thought when he was coming up, and it wasn't that long ago he was named in that England squad, and you're kind of thinking, oh, we got him now, he'll probably kick on, like get a few caps for Scotland. But he's not really even cemented himself within that Edinburgh side.
What's Ali Price's contract like?
I think it's coming.
He's definitely got one more year.
Yeah. Yeah.
I think there is some chat that he might be looking to move on, which I wouldn't be surprised by.
No.
And a big earner, and kind of makes sense for both parties.
Maybe. George Horn's YouTube.
Yeah, George Horn timed his form run very well for some renegotiations with the SRU.
Yeah,
yeah.
Coming out this season, V-Hot, they just saw that support line at the weekend, and they were like, "Fucking sign this boy up again for two more years."
But that content, George Horn's support lines, like, gets 500 likes every time, so I think from the SRU perspective they're seeing that as like a positive. They can monetize that, they could sell that as like sponsored content. What else do you want to talk about since we're all here? Glasgow against the Lions at the weekend,
looking like quite a big game now.
Yeah, can Glasgow win the Challenge Cup?
I mean, in that context, Alan, that, like, you know, is it?
Love how we're like a Scottish podcast and we've got a knockout European game and we're like, is that interesting? Oh, I don't know, can't be fucked.
Mainly just because I think Glasgow will very easily get through it.
I don't know about very easy.
I don't know about very easily. You know, Lions are one of the weaker South African teams, but still a South African team.
I think,
and like, I don't know.
Pretty easy 20-point win.
20 points. Are you paying money? What's the...
The spread's like 16.5 points for Glasgow.
Yeah, you always talk about the spread. You always talk about the spread, and you never get any of these bets right. So I don't think you actually know what spread means. You just say these words, and you know.
Well, I actually had money on Glasgow to beat Munster away, and that came off. Yeah, so shut your pie.
Nice.
Well, I also made
£3.
Well, yeah, I also had money on Edinburgh to beat Connacht, but you know, these you can't win them all, right?
Yeah, Glasgow are 16-point favourites. I can't believe that.
I just think the Lions just said away, not a great turnaround.
Yeah,
Glasgow. I just don't see them taking it that seriously.
So that that would lead to a semi. If Glasgow win, that's the semi final, right? Against
Scarlets versus it's Scarlet and Clermont.
It will either be Scarlets away or Clermont at home.
And then it's Toulon Lyon in one of the other quarters and Treviso Cardiff.
I think they could beat any of those teams, right?
Yeah, 100%.
There's no like standout French or English side within that.
I think if you get 1872 Cup, Scottish Italian Shield, and the Challenge Cup, you are knocking on the doors of an open top bus tour.
I knew you were going to say that.
Surely, like a gathering in George Square for that.
Did they do anything when they won the Pro 12?
Good question. Let's find that out.
So like Al Kellogg, they did like a little stage for him in George Square.
A wee stage.
A little stage.
Just a little stage.
Did they actually, or did you just make that up?
No. I made it up, but I have no idea. yeah. But I mean, ultimately, it does feel like the URC, or winning the URC anyway, is definitely a step too far, at least for this season, for Glasgow. You know, if they get semi-finals, that feels like that's a pretty good job from where they
it's
started.
It's hard to see anybody beating Leinster, though, right?
But semi-finals, would that not be the same as last year? Or was that quarter-finals they got to?
They got absolutely annihilated in the quarter-final by Leinster.
No, I know. It's quite interesting to be like, oh, it's such a better season when they've won one more game. If it got to that point.
I agree.
It's worlds apart.
But I guess, if I remember correctly from last season, they sort of started off very well and then began to sort of tail off and then just got that eighth spot. and then obviously went. And there's obviously a bit of how they gave an account for themselves over there as well, right?
That was the 70 points that cost Danny his job, right?
Yeah. And look at them now, 70 points against the Dragons.
Yeah. And Danny Wilson's going as a skills coach to Leicester?
Oh, is he?
Yeah, he was. Yeah, he's there at the moment.
Oh, is he?
Coaching them against Edinburgh on Friday.
SRU.
Yeah.
Danny Wilson always came across like a pretty good guy.
Yeah, agree.
Well, that's the thing. I think if they'd only lost by 50 to Leinster, Danny Wilson would still be the Glasgow coach.
Which is quite a thought.
Yeah.
Franco Smith, you know, Franco's army, like, we wouldn't have had it.
Yeah. Franco has so overperformed the spread this year.
Ah. Oh.
There's genuinely no one who called how well Franco Smith.
They should. Glasgow's social media team should get Franco Smith to read like mean tweets about him. That'd be such good content.
Actually, would be quite good.
Probably like one of ours. Like, he's terrible. Fuck.
Franco Smith would batter any of us as well. I'm quite scared of him.
Yes, I think so. Yeah.
Doesn't really seem to be that open to like just general chat with pundits.
He doesn't come across that well.
I still think he's that bothered by it.
I think he's very happy to trot out a few platitudes. He's like, I just don't care.
Yeah, exactly.
I wonder if he's thinking about the Scotland job, Alan. I hadn't thought about it until you said it, and now Franco's putting himself in the frame.
If 1872, Scottish Italian Shield, Challenge Cup, and then semi-final, then I think he's in the... And there's no one else available.
And Tooney decides to go and take a club job. Franco is in the conversation.
Tooney's still there, but there's a very limp exit from the World Cup. Like, we don't... You know, we don't even land a blow against South Africa and Ireland, like 20 point losses both sides, just scrape past Tonga, then I think you got to have the conversation about whether Franco is worth the punt.
I mean, that's such a wild outcome versus like within a year, right?
Yeah.
Within a year. Like no one, probably most, or a lot of Scottish rugby fans would have no idea who Franco Smith was, ultimately.
But when you win the Scotland Italian Shield, what are you going to do?
Good things. Well, good things happen.
You just win it. You've run away with it.
Yeah, exactly.
It's an extraordinary result.
You've only got two of the bottom three teams in your league, so.
Well, look, I mean, it's been great to chat to you guys. It's been fairly like rambling conversation, but I hope you know you guys have got some. The fans have gotten a taste of us again. You know, I don't actually think we did review the Six Nations at all. Don't think we talked about that one bit. So quite happy with that. You can always keep in touch with us on Twitter at Thistle Rugby Pod, on Instagram Thistle_Rugby_Pod, and Alan has told us that he is preparing something for Substack. So get yourself on there, Thistle Scottish Rugby Podcast, for our occasional written musings. And yeah, we will chat to you again very, very soon. Cheers.
Cool.
Yeah.
Nice. That'll do.
That'll do. Stop this.
There's Tinny.
So Tinny.
Yeah, I don't know why that's happened.
Tinny Weasley.
Tim Henman.
Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Cats and cat owners deserve better than any old-fashioned litter. That's why I teamed up with scientists and veterinarians to create Pretty Litter. Its innovative crystal formula has superior odor control and weighs up to 80% less than clay litter. Pretty Litter even monitors health by changing colors to help detect early signs of potential illness. It's the world's smartest kitty litter.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code ACAST for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.